Hello, and welcome to the Metacarl, episode 200, 200. Hooray, we did it.
Dude, play them John Cena trumpets, baby.
I don't know the John Cena trumpets.
Yeah, no. Everyone will know when I say that. It will play in their heads automatically if they've ever watched wrestling.
Wrestling fans. There was a time where I was aware of wrestling things, and that time is not now. I have too many other things to be aware of. But I am aware of John Cena being a person, and I know that he puts his hand in front of his face and he says, "You can't see me." And so,
good job. That's all you need to know about.
There we go.
He wins a lot.
And apparently he wins a lot. And it's, I hear it's stacked though. I hear he cheats because, you know, like the other guy's not allowed to win.
I mean, that's a fact. For those of you who don't know these things, it is scripted.
Oh, shit. Really? Oh, man. Well,
still fun to watch.
Still fun to watch, yeah. And the NFL is also scripted while we're at it, so we're gonna burst that bubble.
I respectfully disagree with that.
That's why the Patriots.
My team is the Jaguars, and I still disagree with that. So,
yeah, if the NFL was scripted, they'd throw the Jaguars a bone every once in a while, right? There are a lot of people that live in Florida.
Yeah, Duval.
What?
That's their chant, dude. They yell Duval. It's the county Jacksonville's in.
Oh, I don't know that reference. My favorite one though, I don't know where I learned this, but the Saints, their chant is "Who dat? Who dat? Dare gonna beat the Saints?" And that cracks me up. I think that's awesome. But
it's making fun of the Bengals, because the Bengals always say "Who day" when
"Who day."
Yeah, who they think gonna beat them Bengals? Yeah.
No, oh, well, the Packers have all sorts of stupid things that we like to do, like putting cheese on our head and such. So, I'm not one to talk.
I like your funny hats.
Yeah. Anyways.
Welcome to Sports Talk on your Magic the Gathering podcast, episode 200. Look at us look like morons.
Yeah, man. Hey, you're not here for this, I know, but guess what? You're not also here for probably Commander, but maybe you are here for Commander because it is the title of this episode. This is our Commander special. Typically, we don't talk about Commander on this podcast, and it's not really something we play a whole lot of, but as I have previously alluded to, lately it's all I've been playing, and I think that a lot of players are kind of shifting to it because of, like, you know, it's sort of like the thing you get to do right now. There's no modern stuff going on in your LGS. There's no legacy stuff. You can't really play Standard except for Arena. So Commander is, like, super accessible. It's fun to build decks, and it's now exciting, too, because Commander Legends are being spoiled, or previewed, I should say. And the Commander Green, I don't know what you call that, Commander Collection Green as well. So lots of Commander excitement, and I thought we should talk about that format, specifically from the perspective of a player who is, like, enfranchised in the modern and legacy game. Like, I'm speaking about Daryl when I say legacy, because I have nothing to do with that aspect. But,
well, I sold a lot of my legacy stuff, so I'm no longer enfranchised in either of the games. I've just invested so many years that I still like to play. I sold my stuff to buy a house, though, so I mean, it's fair.
Well, speaking of selling stuff and not owning cards, you could do that if you were to just subscribe to manatraders.com, which is one of our wonderful sponsors, and you could play Commander Online, and I have been doing so. You know, you can play four-player games of Commander Online, and it's not as boisterous and awful as you may think. It's a little boisterous and awful, but you can minimize the windows for the players who aren't currently active, and It's kind of nice, because the one thing I hate about Commander is when you have, like, you know, like your one, like Sensei's Divining Top or whatever, it's like a $30 card. You don't want to, like, shuffle it. You don't want to, like, constantly be taking it out of a deck and putting it in another deck. You don't have to worry about that with your Moto collection. So it's nice and easy to do that. Or even better, you don't have to own it at all. You can just subscribe to manatraders.com, and then you can just, you know, play whatever the heck cards you want. So use the promo code MODERNMEDICAL, all one word, no spaces, no hyphens, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout.
There it is.
There you have it. Nice segue. What do you think?
I unintentionally teed you up there, but let's talk about, do you want to do spoilers first? Or Commander, you want to do spoilers first, or do you want to do philosophy.
Well, okay. Before we get into that, though, we have to talk about the elephant in the room because, you know, we would be remiss not to identify that Field of the Dead is no more in historic. We talked about historic quite a bit last week.
Yes.
Today, Field of the Dead has been banned in historic to the surprise of no one, right?
I was about to say, as a guy who plays a lot of historic, how do you feel about this?
I'm very happy that it's banned. I'm actually a little surprised that they didn't go further with it because I think that, like, you know, I think 99.9% of people were, like, expecting that to happen today. But I think there were more people that were maybe thinking that Muxus would potentially go with it, maybe even Uro. But that said, the Field of the Dead deck had been beating up on goblins pretty well and oppressing goblins, it seemed. So we haven't seen a lot of representation from that lately. At least I'm currently playing in the platinum tier on Arena, and it is just shit tons of field, and it's just crazy. That deck is just too powerful. If all you have to do to win the game is play lands, it's really tough to get through. Then the problem is, if your strategy is a creature strategy and you can't get through an army of 2/2 zombies, you have no chance. So all of the creature decks are just invalidated. So goblins, despite having the ability to just explode with a bunch of goblin tokens, it doesn't really matter if the opponent already exploded with a bunch of 2/2s.
Sure.
Yeah. So very happy to see that go. Card's stupid.
I mean, I like the idea, which is let's do this, you know, let's take it one thing at a time. And let's ban the most egregious thing. And then if there's no, you know, we don't have data, so, like, let's let Muxus and Uro duke it out. They seem like similarly powered cards as far as how they kind of make their decks kind of warp around them a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's let them duke it out, and if they're oppressive, we can get rid of them and slowly start to make our way.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, there's just so much representation from Uro already. It's just getting so old. It's getting so tired. And the fact that the card is a mythic, it makes it so much harder to digest because it's so expensive. So for any player to, like, eye up, like, the standard metagame or the modern metagame or legacy, any 60-card constructed format at this point, 75-card, however you want to look at it, and decide what deck to build, and they want to play, like, a mid-range strategy, like, you're in for 3 to 4 Uros, welcome to, like, buying a car.
This is historic, though. So, I mean, this is why I'm talking about, you know, in the frame of the conversation, right? I mean, it's historic. Muxus and Uro are sort of two of the big beaters. So let's let them figure it out, see if one of them is too oppressive, and then we can slowly start to pare back on them.
Yeah, so good point. Like, then maybe this is the format where it belongs, and then, like, it needs to go from another format. The reason to ban something should not be the price, right? But I think the ubiquity and the fact that, like, when you play a strategy as vast as mid-range and you feel like there's no reason not to play green and blue in that strategy, and there's no reason not to include 4 of this card, I think that says something about it. A card,
so that will speak to price inherently because of supply and demand.
And that causes the price, right? Yeah. But I think a card like Uro is not, like, inherently, like, oppressive. Like, it doesn't do anything to win the game. Well, it does. You know, it does win the game. It is a 6/6, right? But it just grants a lot of value. It grants a lot of life. It does so much to just, like, piece the deck together. But it's not like the Thassa's Oracle that says you win the game on it. It's not like the, like, egregious removal spell that makes it impossible for your opponent to do their thing. Like, it really isn't putting a roadblock in your opponent's plan, aside from just, like, putting an immense amount of pressure on them in the late game and just continuing to do so because you can't get rid of the damn thing. So it's just always around. It's just so inevitable. So it's tough to deal with, and, you know, it's just kind of, I think it's gonna be the poster child and of value in every format until it gets banned, and so we got to get used to that probably.
I 100% agree with you.
All right. Anyways, field's gone in historic. I'm happy to see it. I think that we're gonna see goblins come back. I think that we're going to see the mono blue deck come back. I think we're going to see Coco rise up. Because now the, you know, the creature value decks and the kind of like the Jund sacrifice decks can kind of do their thing again. However, I feel like those decks probably had a good chance of going above the goblin or the zombie armies. So
yeah,
we shall see. Those field decks could just do so much. They could play like the best wrath spells in the format and then still like have the biggest board presence afterwards. It's like it just wasn't there. So
yeah, not reasonable.
Okay, Commander. So you get 100 cards, one of each card. I'm just kidding.
So wait, do you want to talk like theory? Do you think we need to do a review, or do you want to talk spoilers first? Like
no, I don't. I think that anyone that plays Magic is aware of like how Commander works. I do want to do like a historical like review of this format though, because there's a lot about Commander that I think a lot of people overlook because it hasn't always been Commander. And even though EDH has the same rules as Commander, it's the same format. Like things were a lot different back in the days of EDH. Yeah. You know, like the difference being, WotC recognized this as a format, and then WotC started to like print cards that were geared towards Commander, right? And not only that, they printed cards in standard legal sets that were geared towards Commander. And just the other day, I have a Korean Field of the Dead. Field of Ruin, excuse me. And one of my friends was like, doesn't that activate for everybody? I was like, no, it doesn't. That would be silly. And it totally does. Yeah, he texted me today. He's like, no, it does. It activates for everybody. Like, that is so not the intention of that card. And I'm taking it out of all my decks now because it's terrible. But yeah, it does. It says each player.
I got burned by that once online, and I immediately cut it from my deck. I was like, oh, well, that's less than ideal.
So there are a lot of cards out there now that, like, the wording is slightly altered than it would have been prior to, like, EDH becoming Commander because of the fact that they're recognizing that multiplayer is a bigger part of the game. Take Priest of the Forgotten Gods as an example. I think that's what the card's called. It's the 2-mana black creature that says you sacrifice 2 creatures, and then it says any number of target opponents sacrifices a creature, discards a card, and loses 2 life. And that's the guy that you add 2 black mana, draw a card, etc.
Huh?
But it says any number of target opponents. So, like, you know, prior, you likely would have just seen, you know, your opponent or target opponent. But cards like that, while they normally would be, you know, just good in a one-on-one match, like, they scale much better in multiplayer matches. So, beyond that, then when we have these, like, Commander specific products such as like the Commander decks themselves, the pre-constructed decks, and now the Commander Legends decks, and
that started in 2013 also, the Commander decks. So that's kind of where it went from Commander being EDH and being this format made up by Sheldon Mennery and his folks who literally, it was just like everyone gets one of the 5 Elder Dragons, gets one of the Elder Dragons, And then play Singleton with only those colors, and the Elder Dragon is the creature you can cast over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
To the format we now know and love.
Yeah. So as soon as they started to print the products such as those, and I would even include like Conspiracy and like Battle Bond into those like kind of Commander slated products. They're sort of like geared towards that as far as like constructed playability.
A lot of good reprints in those, like Seaborn Muse and Vidalkin Horry. These cards that, like, if you don't know it, are randomly $20, $30, $40 because of Commander.
Or even just new additions too, just things that are like completely fresh. But my point being, like, there used to be like fewer cards to choose from that were just those big splashy like 8+ mana spells that would end those big multiplayer games, and now there are just tons of them. Now we're just like there is just a wealth of like insurrection level cards to play, and so the a set like this, like Commander Legends, which is coming out in November, is a big set, and we are going to have tons of these cards. A financial perspective, you have to consider, like, when this kind of stuff happens and these cards are only printed in these like Commander specific products, they are in high demand and they are often pretty pricey because they are not being you know, opened for drafting purposes as often as standard legal sets are. Like, this one obviously is geared towards drafting, but I can't imagine we're going to see as many in circulation. But
I think they actually might print this to the size of a standard legal set because Commander is so popular.
They could. I don't know if they will be open to that much. I don't know what to expect. But yeah. I did see the MSRP of the booster boxes is expected to be about $125, so just a little bit more than standard legal boxes. So I'm thinking probably like $5 or $6 a pack. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, it is.
But I'm thinking that some of those chase rares and mythics, if this is the only set that they're going to appear in, they're going to be costly.
I agree with you.
Take Arcane Signet, for example. Arcane Signet only appeared in the Brawl decks, and though it's like it's an uncommon, I believe, it's still like a $4 uncommon because it's kind of like an auto-include in all those Commander decks. That one, I believe, is going to be in Commander Legends.
They reprinted it once more, I think. But another good card that you can look at that is kind of those single inclusions is those Commander deck cards themselves. So, like, a lot of times Commander decks get a print that is very specific to their deck. And so, you know, we saw it in the past when they saw Legacy play things like Baleful Strix and Shardless Agent, True Name Nemesis, things like that. They're only printed in that one place that see Legacy play. That drives their price up. But as well as these things that only get seen and printed in one place that then are just insanely good in Commander have the same effect. And so one such card is Dockside Extortionist.
Oh, yeah.
It was printed in the Commander 2019 deck, and it's the only place it's been printed. One in a red, when it enters the battlefield, makes X treasure, where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. So it considers multiplayer, considers all your opponents. And this thing is a 2-drop that you can make 6 or 7 treasures, sacrifice it, reanimate it, make 6 or 7 more treasures. And if you can do some sort of crazy loop thing, you're making infinite mana with something like a Nim Deathmantle. But this card's $33. It's only been printed once.
Yeah.
Wouldn't really see much play in like Legacy or Modern or anything like that. But given the nature of Commander and the fact that every deck that plays red is going to want to play this card, the card is expensive.
Yep. Yeah, definitely a good card. And same with the cycle of the like the new forces, quote unquote, the like 3-mana spells. If you control your commander, you can cast them for free. Fierce Guardianship being the biggest one. Fierce Guardianship is like a $26 card right now, which seems like an awful lot of money to pay for a card that comes in a $40 pre-constructed pack. But it's in print right now, and you know, the longer that this goes on, like the scarcity is going to be increased, the demand is going to be increased as well, and you know, I think that card only has room to grow as long as that's not included in Commander Legends. So I'm hoping with this set that because it's such a large set, is they identify those cards, and even if they've been recently printed in those products, they're, you know, they're including those high demand Commander staples like Dockside Extortionist and Fierce Guardianship right away in those products, because, you know, if they don't, they're going to be 50-60 plus pretty quickly.
Yeah.
No, yep, people buy those decks out like crazy. Place.
Yeah, and this is a perfect place for them to do something like that, for them to be able to reprint all of these cards in such a way that that they'll be accessible to the public, and they can print this set hugely, and it won't be a problem at all.
Yeah, so I wanted to start with that. We're not a finance podcast, but I do want to like just kind of put that word of caution out there, because if you're a Commander player or a prospective Commander player, I think it's worth keeping an eye out for those types of cards, because you're going to have that opportunity to kind of get in at, you know, the ground level, whereas if you wait a little while, you know, you might have, you know, I don't mean to induce any FOMO on this stuff, but there will be some major missed opportunities on some of those cards that you can either trade for or hope to buy singles on while they're cheap, that will likely be much more expensive.
It's likely after they go out of print, you'll see that happen.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There was a chance to strike in the early days, though. Like I said, when things were EDH, that was back when I was in college and when Daryl was in college. Yeah, that's proper grammar. And Daryl, I don't know, you were playing EDH back then, weren't you? When it was kind of first started as a format?
Not to the like scale of things. Like I mean, Define first started, like, I think I played my first game of EDH in, like, 2012, but I wasn't really serious about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because in, like, 2008, it was when I got back into Magic after taking like my second or third hiatus. You know, like people come and go from this game all the time. But when I was living in the dorms, I saw a group of people playing, and it was our fellow podcast host Brendan Semerow, actually, who was on like the first like 20 or so episodes of this podcast. And we got together and in the dorms we started playing EDH when it was first created. So we got to, you know, we bought in on some really cheap singles that later became huge valued because of Commander just gaining all sorts of popularity. But we had this group of like six players that would just sit around the table in the rec room of our dorm and play constantly. It was always the same deck, and people were known for the same strategies. And there was a guy that would play Xur the Enchanter Stasis Lock all the time, and it became such an inbred meta game that it was like everyone's deck was so specifically designed to like hate out everyone else's deck that like we had some very specific anti-stasis stuff, and it was just really, really silly, but super fun, and it always makes for such a good time and like such good like kind of just chatter and camaraderie between you.
Oh, Lordy. Wow, yeah. No, I didn't really have much of a EDH play group until I moved to Madison in 2012, 2013. Really kind of got into it there. I built like everyone's Timmy first. I like this creature from my standard cards deck, and then never really tried to make it much better or understood that, you know, certain commanders should have certain strategies or should have certain cards in them. So like, I never really got into it until I had a little more money, but I was purchasing cards that like ended up spiking and I sold them later. Like I was in on the ground floor of stuff like Dollar Cyclonic Rifts.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which, those were cheap for a long time, man. Yeah. We found a website that was primarily a Pokemon card vendor and got a bunch of really, really good prices on staples like Skull Clamps and Sensei's Tops and things like that once. And we just went on a couple of shopping sprees for some Commander staples and had some good time.
Those were kind of the early days. And so now Commander is like one of the main drivers of Magic Finance.
Yeah,
So it's really interesting that they've come around to Commander Legends and wanted to print these cards to like give them some space to reprint a bunch of cards and things like that. So let's talk about the spoilers themselves.
Yeah.
And then we'll double back and talk about, you know, how do we approach Commander as people that have played a lot of really powerful, like constructed competitive Magic, and how do we handle it?
Do we
play CEDH? If we're not playing CEDH, how do we build our decks? Things like that.
Now, when you say CEDH, you're saying that like in quotations, like specifically, are you sitting down for a CEDH event, or are you saying, is this like deck that you're playing, is this like CEDH level, or is it more casual? That kind of thing.
So the CEDH level style decks, are you looking to play those kinds of games? Or if we're not playing those games, like how do you build your deck up wise?
Yeah.
But yeah, let's go ahead and take a look at the spoilers. I got the spoiler up. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
Number one thing I think a lot of competitive constructed Magic players will appreciate is a Mana Confluence reprint.
Yes.
So that's a land. It's a land. Pay one life, any color in your mana pool. It doesn't have the unfortunate text that City of Brass has, where if it gets tapped in any other way, you lose a point of life. But this card was pretty expensive. Wasn't it like $20?
Yeah, it was up there. You can thank like Pioneer for that. I think Pioneer had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
It had limited prints too, so it's good to see this one coming back. It is a mythic though, notably.
Yeah, it is a mythic because, I mean, it's... In a format where people are kind of pigeonholed into certain colors, the mana fixing is going to be the choke point.
Mm-hmm.
They are letting you have a bunch of command towers, though. So functionally, better City of Brass at that point.
It's silly that this card is a mythic in a set where command tower is a common. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, it's like it ignores the mana functionality of City of Brass. It's like this is a clear reprint for financial purposes and competitive purposes.
Well, don't put Command Tower in your Karn EDH deck. That doesn't work.
No, it technically makes Colas, I think.
No, it does not Colas produce anything.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. I never built a Colas EDH. So even the Artifact Legends I used had colors. So I never had this problem.
All right, and then landwise, we have the other cycle. This is so from, I think it was Battle Bond, was it, that we got cycle?
It was Jumpstart.
Which
one was the sports themed one? Battle Bond?
Yeah,
was
Battle Bond. Sports? Battle Bond was the two-headed giant themed sports themed set where we had enters the battlefield tapped unless you have two or more opponents. I almost said control two or more opponents. And it's their dual lands. So now we have the blue-red, black-green, white-black, green-blue, and red-white land cycle from that. So there is a whole set of five of those from Battle Bond, all of the remaining color combinations. Now you have access to all 10. They are just lands. They're not island mountains. They're not fetchable.
Not fetchables, no.
But they are kind of, you know, kind of unrestricted duels, assuming that you're playing a multiplayer game. So that's kind of nice. Battle Bond ones, they're like $5 or $6 right now, I think.
Oh, did they go down? No, they were more expensive than that.
Were they? Okay. Last I checked, they were about $5 or $6, but it's been some time. I was surprised. I was thinking those would be, you know, just scarcity wise, because I don't think Battle Bond was open nearly enough. But I'd expect those ones to be much more expensive going forward, and these ones to be, like, you know, cheaper.
Sea of Clouds is about $12, $13.
Okay, all right.
That's the blue light one.
Yeah, but I could see the argument for not even bothering to play them just because there are so many other non-basics that you've got. And, you know, I'd almost want, like, a Hallowed Fountain over it because of the ability to fetch it in some cases.
Yeah, well, I mean you're playing a singleton format. So, like, look at your two-color deck. Mm-hmm. Your two-color deck, you have Tundra. Like, if you have the money, Tundra. Hallowed Fountain. Prairie Stream, Irrigated Farmland, Glacial Fortress.
Yeah.
This thing. Like, there are a lot of dual lands, but you want all the ones that come into play on tap. So it's like Tundra, Hollowed Fountain. This thing is third. Glacial Fortress is fourth. Prairie Stream is fifth. And then, like, all your other duels are probably coming to play tapped. Mystic Gate is sixth. Like, you want to play all the untapped duels because you, like, want to be able to cast your spells.
Yep. Yeah, in a 2 and a 3 color deck, I think so. Once you get to like 4 and 5 colors, though, it's a little tough because you do get a little tight on non-basics, and you also want to make sure you have enough basics to fetch out with like your cultivates and things like that.
I mean, when you get to like 4 and 5 color decks, though, like realistically, it makes more sense to play like fetch shock dual mana bases at that point.
Exactly.
But I would agree with you. Like, you know, if you have perfect duels, these guys won't make it in your 4 and 5 color decks.
My 5 color mana bases lately have been all 5 of the Triomes, because the Triomes have, you know, the basic land types, and then my land tutor package has like Wood Elves type stuff where I can search my library for a forest and put it into play.
So all the forest type dual lands, yep.
Yeah, and all the forest shocks. I don't have duels, so
sure.
So that kind of thing. There's different ways to search for basics. Like if you have a Rampant Growth, you search for a basic land. But then if you have a Wood Elves, it literally says search your library for a forest. So that allows you to find like the Triome in that case. Anyways, yada, yada, yada. This is a good way to get your mana base representation. Okay, going on. We got a Prosh reprint. Sweet card. Love Prosh. I'm a big fan of Jund. Okay, this was a Brandon Semerow special, speaking of Brandon Semerow, but he always used to play this Jund Warp World deck, where the plan was to play like all permanents in the deck except for Warp World, and all the permanents generated just more value. Like it was more tokens or put more lands into play, and when you cast Warp World, you would find like Eternal Witness or Skull, whatever it is, the guy that does like an Eternal Witness effect. So you could then return the Warp World to your hand and cast it again and just keep repeating, just keep looping.
Eventually leave your opponent with no permanence because they have spells.
Yep. And Prosh is really one of the best guys to do that with, because when he comes into play, he gives you minimum 6 other tokens. So that's 7 more permanents when you Warp World with a Prosh on the battlefield.
Yeah, no, very, very good at the Warp World special. I had Warp World in the Corvold deck I built, that I was working on trying to like figure out, just because it, like, you were interested in making tokens and lands and treasures and stuff like that. So yeah, similar sort of effect there. Let's talk about the new cards.
Yeah.
We talked about all the old cards. Let's start with the green and red partners. So Helana, Kessig Ranger, and Alina, Kessig Trapper. They are not necessarily the partners like Will and Rowan, where you play one to search for the other. They can be played separately, but the way their abilities are put together, it makes sense to play them together.
And they look like friends.
And they look like they know each
They look
other.
like they're hunting together.
So Helana, Kessig Ranger is 3 and a green for 3/4 legendary creature human archer with reach. When another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 2. When you do, that creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature. So it doesn't fight, it just straight up Uvenwald Tracker just straight up deals damage, or sorry, better than Uvenwald Tracker, straight up deals damage. And then it's a partner. You can have 2 commanders if they both have partner. And then Alina, Kessig Trapper is a 4/5 mana, 4 and a red for a 4/3 first strike. Tap, and then the amount of red equal to the greatest power among creatures you control that entered the battlefield this turn with partner.
Sick. They're both uncommons, by the way. Notable because this is a draft format. These decks, or these packs, are 20 cards and always include, I think, two legends, it said. And there are, I think I read 71 legends in this form, in this set. And so that will include reprints and new cards alike. But that's an awful lot of legends. 41 partners.
And they created a common legend intentionally for this, which is the Prismatic Piper. It's just a color, 5 colors for a 3/3. If it's your commander, choose a color before the game, it's that color with partner. So, like, you can have 2 Prismatic Pipers as partner and pick 2 colors and play those 2 colors. If you just happen to not find another legend, or if you want to splash a color, you can play the Prismatic Piper and Prosh. So you could have Prosh plus blue
No,
or
you
Prosh.
have to have a partner
Oh, they both have to
to
have partner.
part. Yeah.
That's it.
It would be very sad to have to play the Prismatic Piper, but it's like mitigates, like if you have a Helana and like you want to play like blue and you don't find a blue partner, like you can play this guy. It's kind of like disappointing that this guy's a 5 mana 3/3 that does nothing otherwise. They should throw you a bone and it should be like a 5/4 or something, a 5/5 for 5. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she
Because
has some
like you're
stats
already
on.
playing like a worthless, like mostly worthless card. It doesn't have any abilities. Like, it's just there for the color identity. So, I don't know. It's a cool art, though. I like it. It just looks like it's kind of like wasted because it's just so bad. Like, it feels like you should do something. Anyways, so there you have it. Just before you introduce this one, I was mentioning 41 partners. So, that's an awful lot of combinations. Notably, there are partners from the original, like when this type of mechanic was first
Good.
introduced, with like Vile Smasher and Chrom and all of that, those were partners too. So added to those guys, there are like now 1,000 some combinations you can do with partners. I have to believe there's some very breakable combination of partners out there. WotC must have missed something. It always happens,
It
right?
already exists. It already exists. It's called Thrasios and Temna.
Thrasios and Timna. Yeah,
We
well,
didn't need new partners.
just wait
But
for
like,
41 more to show up. That's all I'm saying.
oh yeah. And I mean, this is the kind of place where we need an infusion of those cards, because like Thrasios was only printed in one place and it's $50 right now.
Yeah. I'm thinking those guys are probably gonna be part of this set.
I would assume so. So it's a good place to reprint a card like that. Two more new cards for now. So Keeper of the Accord is not a legend. It's 3 and a white for a human soldier. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more creatures than you, make a 1/1 soldier. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more lands than you, search your library for a basic plains and put it onto the battlefield tapped. Shuffle your library.
This guy's awesome.
That's yeah, this card's very good. Like, I play a control deck. It doesn't have very many creatures. This guy might make it, because, like, that deck wants to just always be on par with lands. And so, like, if my opponents are all green and ramping, I can just play this guy and get three free ramps until I'm on par.
And you could intentionally play a bunch of like the Kairu lands. You could play like Lotus Fields and things like that to bring your land count down on purpose. You could play things that sacrifice lands, you know? Yeah. You could play ghost quarters and things like that. I mean, obviously this guy is not a legend, so it's harder to build around him, but there are other cards like Keeper of the Accord. Like, he's a land tax effect basically. So, you know, we're reaching more of a critical mass of, you know, build around, you know, themes for white to do the land tax style.
I really like this card.
Sengir the Dark Baron is the last new card. 4BB for a legendary creature vampire noble. It is a 4/4 flying, obviously, because it's a vampire. Whenever another creature dies, put 2+1/+1 counters on Sengir the Dark Baron. This guy will be good in my Marchese of the Black Rose deck. Whenever another player loses the game, you gain life equal to that player's life total as the turn began. So I hope you're paying attention, because a turn in Commander can be like 35 minutes long. So there's going to be a lot often of like...
If a turn is that long, though, like the game is usually ending.
Yeah, I suppose.
Very rarely somebody take a turn that long and not end the game.
This has partner too, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool card. Nothing too special about it. I think usually when someone has to lose the game for something to happen, it's like not terribly playable, but he's interesting. And there are three different arts for this one. I'm not sure what one of these arts is for, but there are like different frames for four of these guys, which I imagine are like some kind of promotional. Is this like from the VIP pack or what? Do you see what I'm looking at? I think
I see the two arts shown here, but I only see two. But yeah, no, there's probably like a VIP pack or like a box topper, something like that.
Yeah. And then we've got Commander Sphere and Command Tower, which seem to be obvious includes. Command Tower is getting printed like crazy, printed like into the ground, which is perfect because that card is, you know, could very dangerously be like a $25 common, if not for just showing up left and right. It was like $3 or $4 at one point even.
Yeah, in every commander deck ever at every possible printing. Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's like an auto include, like even in a monocolor deck, just for the lulz, you might as well put it in there.
Yeah, I don't do that. Now Exotic Orchard is something I do that with if I like have a copy of it, just because like, sure, it might, like, everyone's gonna have Command Tower, and if they're multicolor decks, then you're going to get what their Command Tower makes, but it could produce any, like if they ever have a 5-color land, you just get a 5-color land. And then if you end up by like a situation where you could steal their thing or cast one of your opponent's cards and has like kicker or something like that, or an activated ability, you have a source to generate mana of any color to use that ability.
Are you allowed to generate mana that's not your commander's mana color? I thought that wasn't allowed. So you used to
not be able to do that.
Oh, okay.
They changed that with the color identity rules recently. And I can't remember. There was a card that prompted it. I just can't remember what card it was.
Okay.
But like before, in Zedru decks, you used to play Celestial Dawn, which is 1WW for an enchantment. All lands are planes. They tap, and all lands are planes, and you can spend white mana as if it remained of any color, and all your creatures are white, and all your spells are white.
Mm-hmm.
And you would give it away with Zedru to a player who wasn't playing white, and they couldn't make white mana with their planes out of, because like all their lands are planes and only planes, like a Blood Moon effect.
Yeah.
And they couldn't make white mana because their commander identity didn't have white in it, so they just couldn't play the game.
Jeez.
So like they took that sort of feel bad moment away.
Yeah. Yeah, there was not a really good reason for that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like you can never tap your like mountains for red mana. So like Blood Moon made your like major non-basics do nothing, and that's a really feel bad moment too. So they just kind of took all those problems away.
Oh, I thought it would turn them into colorless. I don't know.
No, it turned them into mountains, and you couldn't tap your lands for mana because they were mountains.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's wacky.
Yeah, they took all those feel bads away.
Okay.
So let's talk about Commander Theory. Like,
yeah,
you and I are pretty competitive players. And so we look to build decks to the best of our abilities most of the time. Is that sort of a thing that carries over for you? Because, like, I, you know, at one point I did play CEDH before I sold all my cards. I had almost all the duels. I was missing a Trop. But like I had a combo deck built with like all the duels and fetches and Wheel of Fortune and LED and like all of the cards that you needed. It was like Brad Eggs. I had that deck totally pimped out and built and like Imperial Seal, the whole nine yards. And so, I sold it because I needed to buy a house, but like I played and it was fun to play and like I understood like the draw to CEDH, but it wasn't the biggest of things for me. How do you feel about like, would you if you could, or like what is your thought there?
Well, here's the way I see it. Like, so first of all, just to clarify, what when Daryl says CEDH, it stands for competitive EDH, right? Which is kind of like a different format in and of itself. And CEDH is where you are playing like fully powered decks. You've got dual lands, you've got like all of the most expensive tutors in the game, you've got all of the like the big mana rocks, you've got like the Chrome Mocks, you've got the, you know, mana vaults.
Grim Monolith, Mana Vault, Mox Diamond, Mana Crypt. Those are the really expensive ones. Yeah. Mox Opal.
And you like, tend
all of those.
You tend to try to win with a combo, right? Would you say most decks win with a combo or like extremely aggressive strategies?
So most decks, like, so there's like a class of decks that are combo decks, and that's why they banned Flash, because like Flash Hulk was absolutely miserable for CEDH, because all it was hold up one in a blue, have like a summoner's pack to tutor for Protean Hulk at any point in time, and the game's over. You had these really compact packages where you sack Protean Hulk, go get some things, and the game's over. But like, yeah, like some decks you win by trying to do like Wheel of Fortune effects with like Thassa, Notion Thief or a Narset or something to that effect. Some decks do like a curiosity style effect with like Thorn or Firebrand Archer, where you play a spell, like that's a card advantage engine, but like oftentimes it'll be an infinite mana combo or an infinite mill combo or an infinite damage combo. And the situations where you don't often see that are like the stacks decks. So, yeah. Like, things that play like Winter Orb and Static Orb and Thorn of Amethyst. Yeah. These cards that slow the game down, and then they can, like, win with their, like, anemic creature beatdowns or a Planeswalker Ultimate or something like that.
So, that tends to be more of, like, a 1v1 format, yeah?
No, it's a four-player format.
Is it? Okay. Well, I would say that is closer to, like, the legacy, like, competitive level, like, experience of Commander. Whereas, like, the more traditional, like, casual commander experience is, like a bunch of people sitting down for a game that's intended to go long. People are trying some cards that, like, you know, are maybe a little more on the experimental side, or cards that are their pet cards. Maybe they're trying a deck that is themed, not necessarily, like, a tribe, but, like, a friend of mine built a cat deck that used as many cats as he could find, but cards that had the word cat in them, including Acorn, Catapult, and Cataclysm. Just, like, concepts, right? Just fun concepts. And so there are different ways to approach the game, and those are two extremes that I'm describing here. Like, obviously, most of the games kind of lie somewhere in the middle, right? People play powerful cards, but they're not intending on just, like, blasting someone's face in. The way that I think that EDH is meant to be enjoyed, or Commander is meant to be enjoyed, and it's really different for lots of people, so take this with a grain of salt, is I think you have to consider the experience of your opponent when you're building your own deck and when you're completing your turns. Now, obviously, that's different for competitive EDH because all players go into it with the expectation that everyone's going to try everything they can to get that edge to win the game, right? That's the fun. That's the experience. But if you're playing a game of Commander where you're sitting down with a bunch of friends and your plan is to play a land destruction deck, like, yes, you had a great time building that deck. You might enjoy playing the deck, but as soon as your opponent goes on tilt because you've destroyed their lands and they literally can't do anything, like, not only are they not having fun, but they're on tilt and you're not going to be enjoying the game either, right? So you have to consider that, like, it's kind of like this experience that you're creating for both players. And really, in the end, it doesn't actually matter who wins the game, because it's just like, you're just like enjoying time with someone else, right? So,
yeah. And that's definitely a way a lot of people look at it. And I guess, like, I'll talk some of my experiences is, like, when I build decks, I, like, have this very competitive mindset of, like, I want to build my deck in the best way possible. Like, I don't want to, like, if I have access to a card, I don't want to play a bad version of the card. So, like, I have Counterspell.
Yes,
I absolutely. Own a Mana Drain. So in my deck, I also play Mana Drain. I play both because they're the best Counterspells. And then, like, okay, what are the other good Counterspells that I want to play in my deck? Well, the problem with Counterspells in EDH is if they're not super efficiently costed and necessary to be that way, they're just standard 1-for-1s. So you want to play Counterspells that have, like, are 2-for-1s that do something else for you. Like something like Spelljack is playable if your meta is really slow or you're a green deck, so you have a lot of ramp. But I play things like Mindbreak Trap that can randomly be free, do something really important, which is exile uncounterable spells, and can also be like a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 or a 4-for-1 if, like, there's a big counter war and you just go, okay, Mindbreak Trap and exile everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, those are the sorts of things that I look at, and it's like, so, like, I have three decks. I have, like, a mid-range value deck. I have a control deck. I have an aggro deck. I have a Xenagos deck. And so, like, I look at it as I want to play to win the game. And I put, you know, the cards I think are the best for how I want the game to play out. But I'm not, like, trying to combo on turn three. It's just, like, I'm playing lands and saying go mostly, or, like, ramping and, like, putting a big dumb idiot into play in the case of the Xenagos deck. Or, like, mid-range value decks like a Yorion deck. So it's, like, trying to blink Yorion every turn and blink my board to draw a bunch of cards and, like, bury everyone under, like, all the powerful cards I have. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, those are kind of the things I'm trying to do. None of them are, like, instant wins, but they're, like, you know, these are going to play a game with my opponents where they have chances to interact and do things too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not suggesting that you play bad cards, but I guess I'm saying that from my state of mind when it comes to Commander is I'm actively, like, trying to avoid playing cards that cause feel bad moments for my opponents. So if I'm building, like, a Niv-Mizzet Commander deck, like, I like Niv-Mizzet. Sure. It's always had a soft spot in my heart. I'm going to enjoy building a deck that has interactions with Niv-Mizzet, but I'm going to avoid putting the card Curiosity in the deck for, like, the easy win combo, right? I don't want to do something as stupid as just, like, playing this one card and, like, winning the game. Like, that just seems brainless to me. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. If that's your style, if that's what you want to do, great. But if I'm just going to end a game for the purpose of ending a game, say, hey, look, I found this card. It's over. Yeah. We're done playing now. Like, who's going to enjoy that? No one. Except for me, maybe for 5 minutes. But,
and, like, maybe you need to have that card in your deck because, like, sometimes the games will go an hour or 2 hours. And that game is, like, it's time to put that game out of its misery. And so you have access to this card when you need it. But you don't have to, like, go tutor for it and slam it on the first opportunity you have.
Yeah, but how can you have the restraint and, like, when you could find it and when you could play it or when it's in your hand, you're just going to hold on to it and just tease your opponents for the next 3 hours. Like, at any moment, I could just end the game, but I'm not going to, you know? Like, I've got my finger on the trigger.
No.
It's just, like, don't put it in your deck then. That's,
you don't tease them, but, like, I mean, there is, like, you know your play group. You know the people you're playing with more often than not.
Yeah.
And so you guys know, like, all right, this game's gone on long enough. Let's start trying to, like, win the game. Like, let's turn on the Jets.
Sure, sure. I guess, you know, and it's like, it's a 6-mana creature. It can be removed. The more you start to do that with your play group, eventually they start to figure out what you're doing and they're going to go after you, right? So, like, politics plays in, like, your history with that deck plays in, and eventually you become a target because of it. So, that's the thing. My point is more so, like, I would like to avoid the combos in my deck that make the games unfun and unfair. But I'm gonna play powerful cards in my deck. I've got a Mana Vault in one of my decks. I have a Mana Vault. I've got the Sol Rings in each of my decks, right? I think everyone does.
I actually am playing a deck without a Sol Ring.
Are you?
Yeah. My control deck, I don't have a Sol Ring because I built the interactive part of my deck to be like, I'm going to interact with the board. And so, like, you know, in our standard formats that we've seen, we're playing stuff like Abrupt Decay, Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile,
mm-hmm.
like Fatal Push, these, like, cheap 1-for-1 removal spells. And, like, maybe you play a couple Supreme Verdicts because the format's fast and, like, you need to kill all the creatures, maybe. But in Commander, like, sure, Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares, Swords more than Path. I cut Path. Mm-hmm. You know, for the exile of a creature is very important. But in reality, you can't trade one for one with your opponents and expect to win the game because your opponents have three times as many cards as you do.
Yeah.
So you'd have to play a bunch of like big draw X's. So I went to like, I'm playing things like Hour of Devastation, Planar Cleansing, Merciless Eviction, or sorry, Hour of Revelation, not Hour of Devastation.
Yeah.
Things that destroy all the permanents that are not lands. So yeah. That, you know, everyone has the lands and do stuff. But if boards get too big, I have a bunch of emergency buttons to say, whoa, 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 let's pump the brakes, let's reset. And I'm getting, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plus for ones. And that's how I'm getting card, like keeping up with my opponent's card parity in my control deck.
Austere Command's one of my favorites because you can kind of pick and choose off the menu.
Yeah, I was not, I actually forewent that one just because it was a little slower, just to have some more of the, like, have some of the quick Wrath of Gods, like have Terminus, have Supreme Verdict, have Wrath of God. And then I went with, since I splashed into black, I got, like, the free roll of, like, Merciless Fiction. You can only play so many of these things because you have to have counter spells and removal spells for things, for, like, specific, like, spot removal spells. And you have to have some draw spells. Like, there's, like, four creatures in the deck.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm not really worried about Wrath on the board. And then you just went with a big dumb dragon. Like, that's kind of the way that control deck ended up shaking out.
Sure. Yeah. So conceptually, you're talking about like theory of the game. Like, we talked about our approach a little bit. I think like the experience is like my top priority and just like having fun. But also, I want to play fun cards. I want to play the powerful cards too. Like, the powerful cards that aren't available to me in my modern decks. I want to play the cards that I am nostalgic to play from like Standards past and that are, you know, from Legacy decks, etc. But I also want to build a balanced and competitive deck because I am going to still try to win the game, right, while I'm having fun. And I think
you and I are on the same page there.
Yeah, I think Daryl, you hit on the head when you talked about including some Wraths, right? There are definitely moments where the board gets out of hand and things need to be reset, and it feels like that causes the game to go longer at times, but it also makes things go faster at times because we can get into such a stalemate that people are just unable to act because you're just staring down a bunch of creatures. There's too many variables on the table and turns take too long, and it, you know, it could be like 40 minutes before it gets back to you. So you got to reset, you got to start over, and someone's got to do something that basically spins the advantage wheel towards them. But going back even before that, I think one of the most important things that I think a lot of players are realizing the value of now more so than ever in Standard and Historic and Modern, but it's especially important in Commander, and we see it with the Sol Rings and the Mana Vaults and the Mana Crypts, is your mana access. And people are playing things like Cultivate and Rampant Growth and Farseeks and things like that. But the one like kind of untouched resource, the one like kind of non-negotiable, and I think that this is sort of like a gentleman's agreement more so than anything, because players tend not to go after land destruction strategies in Commander, though I have seen it, right? Your basic lands, your lands in play and non-basic lands even, are the one thing that are probably the hardest and most difficult to interact with and the least likely to be targeted. So anytime you're putting basic lands onto the battlefield, or non-basic lands, I don't know why I keep saying basics, but with something like Solemn Simulacrum or Explosive Vegetation, you're gaining a huge advantage that is much more difficult to be set back. Mana rocks are one thing, right? Because all it takes is a Shatterstorm or a Disenchant to deal with them. But lands on the battlefield, unless your opponent's playing something along the lines of like Fall of Thran or Armageddon, it's unlikely that you're going to be losing that advantage.
Well, your non-basics are a little weaker. They're like, people are apt to, like, especially if they don't have dual land bases, to play stuff like Ruination or Wave of Vitriol, which is a legitimate card because it like kills all the artifacts and enchantments and all the non-basic lands.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or From the Ashes, which everybody gets some basics, but get rid of all the non-basics that are like Gear of the Dark Depths and all that nonsense that's causing problems. So, like, people are more likely to go after non-basic lands than basic lands. So I think your statement of basic lands is pretty reasonable. But, yeah, typically people shy away from blowing up all the lands because, as you said, Corey, it's a feel-bad moment. So
There's a reason, but, like, you see Solemn Simulacrum in so many decks, though. It's that one universal put a basic into play for all colors.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
But, yeah, like, the way I look at it is, you know, if – you know, sometimes this is where you have to get into an agreement with your play group. If somebody just blows up all the lands and they're ahead, you know, maybe you flounder for a turn or two, but after that, you know, it's not offensive to pick up your cards and just start a new game. And mm-hmm. if you're pretty comfortable with the people you're playing with, this is, you know, then that's where you can see land destruction strategies start to come into the meta if they're reasonable or relevant. Otherwise, they just don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's a time where that is appropriate, right? Like if you're like just going after the player that's struggling on lands, like if there's a player that's missing land drops and then someone's actively going after them with wastelands and stuff, like that's just rude, right? But if there's a player that's playing a green deck and their plan is just to ramp out and then they're getting aggressively attacked by their mana base getting attacked, then that's just a counter strategy, right? That's a different story.
Yeah, maybe you toss an acidic slime over at their land instead of this like artifact that's not that offensive. Yeah, maybe someone wastelands you. Maybe someone else strip mines you. And, you know, those three ramp spells you played kind of got offset. Those things can happen over the course of a game. Maybe someone bounces one of your lands with something. You know, these are things that typically when people go after the lands, the game is ending. It's something like Revelark and acidic slime looping and killing everyone's lands, or Venser bouncing everyone's permanents, or Agent of Treachery stealing all of the lands, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Very rarely are lands like an effective resource.
But, yeah, I don't mean for this to be like a commander etiquette conversation, but I guess my point is just like there are definitely times where it's appropriate to go after non-basics. Like case in point, we're just talking about Field of Ruin and Field of the Dead and how awful that card is. Like you have to kill them, right? Yeah. But in terms of like where's the foundation for like building a deck, I think the most important thing is being able to have access to mana. Putting lands into play is the groundwork for that. If you don't have access to cards that can do that, which is why I always play green, I always want that, then you gotta resort to mana rocks, right? And every deck's got some sort of mana rocks if they don't have access to rampant growth type of effects. I don't know, what's your number on mana rocks, Gerald? You do 5 to 6 or more?
Well, I mean, depends on what the deck I'm playing is intended to do. Like for my control deck, I have none because I'm blowing up the board all the time. I have Solemn.
Yeah.
That's my only ramp card, but mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like land go and using the Wrath to slow the game down and let me catch up.
Yeah.
For my Yorion deck, I'm playing like 10-ish, I think, because like you can blink them and untap them and stuff like that. But like for my Xenagos deck, I think I have like 11 ramp spells because I'm playing all the land ramps plus Sol Ring and Mana Crypt and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, there's so many good ones these days too. And we're getting Commander Spear again in this set, which is like one of my favorites. But like I said, Arcane Signet is kind of an auto include in these decks. It's like one of the most efficient 2-mana ones. Felwar Stone is a big one. Sol Ring and the similar Mana Vault and Friends are all big deals. But there are lots of choices in the 3 and 2 mana range that also have extra abilities, be it, you know, ability to draw cards when you have lots of excess mana, or even exile permits with the obelisk. So beyond mana rocks, once you have the mana, you need something to do with it. So there's interactive spells. You need to have some access to interactive spells. I think the trickiest part in a commander deck is when you choose your color identity is realizing your deck's weakness. So say you are like a mono blue deck, you're probably going to have a hard time dealing with resolved permanents, especially like enchantments and artifacts. So you need to tap into cards like Commit to Memory, or like oftentimes people go to like Cyclonic Rift is an obvious one because it has such a big overload payoff. But dealing with stuff that you can't, normally get off the board with creative means. Duplicate is a great way to deal with creatures that have resolved, things like that.
Spine, if you're looking for more colors for things, Spine of Ishan, Ugin are two that I often see played in commander decks, especially Ugin, just because it's a colorless thing that can just interrupt the whole board, and it's just always playable in decks if they can make big mana.
Yeah, just an example, like I think that there are deficits in every color, right? So like blue is like notoriously bad at doing those types of things, dealing with resolved permanents. But I tend to stay away from like white decks because of their lack of card draw. And so you have to come up with creative ways to just not be hellbent. Like I hate the feeling of like having a bunch of stuff on the board and having nothing in my hand and having nothing to do with the mana I have. So Whatever it is that you having that like bad taste in your mouth about with your deck, there's usually an artifact or some colorless card that can help to kind of ease that for you. So when we're talking about going to like Spine of Ishshaa or like Duplicant, like, you know, there might be even a Mana Rock that has some secondary ability that can either draw cards or exile, like I've mentioned, the Obelisk or some of the, you know, like the Bonders ornament, for example. So, there you have it. And then lastly, I think the most important thing, and this is the thing that's hard for me to come by, especially when I'm trying my don't combo out and don't do anything that pisses off your opponents too much plan, which I know I know a lot of people disagree with because everyone likes to just do the most powerful thing, and that's okay. It's really just your play style. Mine is just I don't want to like win with Insurrection. I don't like the feeling of winning the game with Insurrection. But that said, you do have to end the game at some point. And so you can play dirtly stuff, you can play a lot of card draw, you can play a lot of removal, but if there's not a way to just like end a 3-hour game of Commander with like a card or two, like where is it going, right? So you have to have some means to end the game. I've got this Reaper King deck that can deal with permanents all day long, one for one, but then at a certain point I need to like have something to go off with. So I had to add like Deadeye Navigator to it so I could just start like, you know, blinking a bunch of scarecrows and just like, you know, eliminate my opponent's board so I can attack for the win. Or I've added now what's the replicate clone, the one that gives you 6 copies of a clone.
Rite of Replication.
Rite of Replication, that kind of thing. So it is important to have those win conditions in there at some point, however you achieve those things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's my approach to Commander. I love the format. There are a lot of things I'm hoping to see in this new set. I'm looking forward to seeing the previews as they appear. I think we ought to take a look at them as they show up. I mean, I know that we're not necessarily a Commander podcast, but I'm psyched about it enough to come back to this conversation at some point. I don't know about you.
Yeah, we're enthusiasts. I think it's fine to be enthused.
Yeah, good. All right, man. Well, we're at an hour and 1 minute. We are consistent.
Yeah, good podcast, man.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Catch you next time.
Later.
Modern Metacall is a production of CardKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CardKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to Manatraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Card Knock Life content.